Welcome to Soups On, a podcast with the Loveland City School District Superintendent, all about what's going on in and around the public schools in Loveland, Ohio.
Welcome to the inaugural edition of Soups On. We're here in the office of the Board of Education Office of the Loveland City School District with Dr. Amy Krause, and she's the superintendent. And why we're calling it Soups On, big shocker here, is because the superintendent is our special guest, and we may have other guests all along, but today we're going to talk to Dr. Krause. So Dr. Krause, thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
I think it's exciting. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun too. So as we're doing this first edition of Soups On, yes, there are some hot, you may have heard, hot school district type topics in the community right now, but just tell us a little bit for people who don't know you. I know you're very much out in the community. I see you at a lot of places, but who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm enjoying my sixth year here in the district. I came to Loveland 6 years ago as the assistant superintendent for teaching and learning. Mm-hmm. I had been in Princeton for 10 years. And
What did you do in Princeton?
I was the associate superintendent in Princeton.
Okay. Like that's the second in charge kind
of?
Yeah. Okay.
There was an opportunity to come here, and I had worked with Mr. Hilliker before in some other ways, and so I was excited about the opportunity to come here. So I interviewed and was thrilled to join the team. Loved my job in teaching and learning. That's my passion. I love to work with teachers. I love to work with kids and parents and make school a great experience for everyone. Mm-hmm. But when Chad moved on and I had the opportunity to step in as interim superintendent 3 years ago, I did not want to be the superintendent. I said I would, told the board I would keep things moving while they looked and did a search. And during that 4 months of sitting in that chair and working with the community in a different way and seeing the momentum that we had, I decided to go ahead and throw my name in and let the board determine whether I was suitable and met their expectations to be the superintendent. So I was thrilled when that switched for me.
Gotcha. So that's neat. So, and you've been superintendent now for...
This is my third year.
Third year as a superintendent. Very good. So, and you were a teacher at one point, right, too? Mm-hmm. But not here in Ohio. You told me that before we started recording. So where were you a teacher and what did you teach?
So I taught in Chicago, outside of Chicago, in Cicero, Illinois for 3 years. I taught sixth grade, which was self-contained. So I taught all the subjects in sixth grade. And then my husband got a job in television in North Carolina. So we moved to Asheville, North Carolina.
What does he do in TV?
No, he's not in TV anymore, but he used to be the producer. He would do the topicals where he would tease and try and get you to watch the evening news.
Oh, so he was like a news TV producer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So
okay.
He did that for Channel 5. He did it in Asheville, North Carolina, and so we were there, and I taught middle school math and science for a couple of years there, and then he got a job up here with Channel 5, so we moved up here.
Gotcha. A lot of Channel 5 people live in Loveland.
Randy Rico lives here.
She's like right across the street,
I think. Well, her husband's one of our teachers. So,
oh, is he really?
Yeah, her kids are here in our schools.
I never met her before, but I... was standing behind her in line at the dry cleaners one time and didn't realize it until she was getting ready to leave. And she said something and I'm like, I recognize that. Oh, that's her.
She is the nicest person. All her perky personality on air is her real personality.
That's who she is. Oh,
oh,
really?
100%. Okay. She's always a lot
that's
of fun.
Cool. We've exchanged tweets before, and I think she follows me, and I follow her. But that's about it as far as our relationship goes.
Yeah, she's a great resource to us. We love having her here in the district.
That's cool. So then, like when Ken Brew and some other people live out.
Yeah, Ken Brew, I think, lives outside of Loveland. I've seen him downtown a couple of times.
Well, he's not Channel 5 anymore, but he used to be on Channel 5.
Jennifer Ketchmark's on Channel 12, I think. And okay. Julie O'Neill.
Oh, Julie O'Neill, yep. Channel 9. Yeah, yep. Right. Yeah, she's like, wow, a lot of...
Yeah, I know those ladies from Dancing with the Stars.
Okay, gotcha.
Loveland style.
It's a perfect community, Price Point community for us, washed up journalists. Well, those guys aren't washed up. I'm the washed up journalist. But yes, but this journalist.
We have lots of great resources here in our community.
Yeah, that's a great town. So that's cool. So you taught math, and I let you say that, didn't I? I'm
math sorry. And science.
Math and science, very good. In middle school, that's great. So then you become the superintendent here, and just a sleepy town, nothing really ever going on here in Loveland, nothing really, the superintendent, just a walk in the park, right?
Being a superintendent's never a walk in the park.
No. Well, how many students do we have here, and kind of where do they come from, and what's the shape of the district a little bit, since we're kind of in this inaugural edition here, we probably should...
So we have about 4,600 students enrolled in the district. Some of them in high school go to Great Oaks. Mm-hmm. So they spend part of their time at the joint vocational system over at the Oaks. Mm-hmm. The rest of the students are here with us. Demographically, we have about 16% free and reduced lunch. That's been pretty steady for the last several years. We have great.
That means low income, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. So, yeah, families that qualify for free and reduced lunch through
16, 1-6, right?
1-6.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have we appreciate our relationship with Nest and the work that they do with low income families, and our relationship with Life Food Pantry, trying to support those kids and families. Having access to the school. Most of our children go on to college or a career. We've expanded our business advisory council to try to create clear pathways for students mm-hmm. that may or may not wish to go on to college and may wish to go into the trades, mm-hmm. And make sure that every kid has a pathway so that when they graduate, they know exactly what they're going to do and they have a plan and the skills to go do those things.
So in the Loveland City School District is not just Loveland, right? It's Loveland. It's definitely this. You covered the whole city of Loveland, right?
Mm-hmm. And Miami Township.
Miami Township and part of?
A little bit of Warren County.
A little bit of Warren County. Hamilton Township there, is that?
Maybe. There's a little Goshen Township and a little Sims Township.
Okay.
So
where do most of the kids come from? Are they come from the city of Loveland or do they come from, where do they?
Well, depending on the grade level, we run about 50-50 Claremont County, 50-50 or Hamilton County.
Okay. In all the city of Loveland, or do they more come from Miami Township or?
That's a detail I'd have to look up.
Okay.
Just
that's okay.
Talking in generalities.
Right. Okay. So it's interesting. So that we live in this area here, and it's interesting that 16%, because I think a lot of people would think of Loveland as this purely affluent community, solid middle class, upper middle class, maybe even wealthier homes and families that live here. But we kind of crossed the gamut here, everything from that 16% all the way up to probably very wealthy folks as well, too, here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
The notion of suburban poverty is a little different when you think about lack of access to public transportation. Often communities that have a high poverty rate have lots of agencies, support agencies to help families. Mm-hmm. And obviously we don't have a ton of those agencies here locally. So when you think about suburban poverty, you're looking at how do we equip our families here with access to those resources that, if you were living in the city, you might have more access. You would certainly have access to public transportation. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of the work that Nest does with our families.
So what is a day? How many hours a week do you think you work?
So
it's not 40, right?
No.
And it's probably higher.
So, superintendent's 24/7.
Okay.
So, when I go home, certainly, but, the phone is always on. My principals don't call me a ton. We try really hard to, sort of my rule is don't work after 5 and don't pull, you can work after 5, don't pull other people into your work after 5. So try not to send emails to people that require a response or that might suggest that, they need to do work. You're free to work after that time, but try not to pull other people so that they can develop that balance and they can have that separation so that mm-hmm. you can come back to work fresh the next day. But so if a principal calls me after hours, I know it's important.
Gotcha.
When there's...
Have you ever counted how many hours you worked in a week?
No, I wouldn't want to.
You wouldn't want to. So it's a lot.
It's a lot.
So what does a typical day look like for you?
I'm in by 6:45 every morning. I try to be in by the time, I start my day with high schoolers and, end my day, by the time the rest of the buses are home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I...
So that's like 5?
5 is when buses are in. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll leave early, like 4:30, 5:30, check out, go home and parent for a little while, mm-hmm. and then...
Because did you say you have 3 kids?
I do have 3 kids, so...
You didn't say that. Did we get that far?
I didn't, not on the air. But I do have 3 kids, 3 teenagers. Uh-huh. So sometimes I'll try and parent for a few hours in the evening, and then come back to work, whether I come in the office or whether mm-hmm. I'm, just working remotely. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even begin to count the hours.
Right.
But, you know, it's about being on call, and you know, safety is a huge concern. So we have an amazing relationship with a Loveland PD. Mm-hmm. So if there's something going on in the community, you know, Chief Ray will call me. No one wants to get a phone call from the chief of police in the middle of the night,
right.
But I'd rather know so that we can be prepared and make good decisions. So, you know, it is about being on call so that we can make sure our kids are safe.
Right. So, and then how many employees do you have in the district? Do you know? I'm sorry. Did I say, all these tough questions.
I think we have, I don't know. I'd hate to guess. The number 200 sticking in my head, but then 600 sticking in my head. So maybe one's certified staff and one's classified staff.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Well, those are important questions. And I didn't really tell you I was going to ask you those. So I apologize for, for that, but I just kind of stuck in my head that maybe we should do that as well too. So, right now out in the community I joke that it's a walk in the park, but there is definitely a lot of talk going on about this, levy that's coming up. And we've been talking about doing this podcast for probably a year or so.
Yeah.
And, when this started to heat up, I said, maybe we ought to start talking about that, and we can start talking about the levy. And we hope to do this periodically, maybe once a week or so, but, you know, we'll do it when we can, when my schedule allows and your schedule allows, we can do this, and we can talk about a range of different topics, not just school levies and that sort of stuff. But a school district, there's a lot to talk about. I personally want to know why they don't cook lunches in schools anymore, because I think the food's nasty. But that goes back to when I was substitute teaching and a whole other story. But we don't need to talk about that today.
We do cook our food here.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's good to know. I didn't know that. I think I ate lunch one time with one of my, I've got two stepsons and a daughter who's soon to be entering the Loveland schools, dude. And I ate lunch there one day, and I loved my school lunches when I was a kid. I was a weird kid who loved, I looked forward to school lunch. My mom was a horrible cook, but, you know, sorry, Mom. But she knows. We used to say, Mom, you want to burn us some dinner? Because
I empathize. My husband does all the cooking in our house. So
yeah, my dad was much better at my mom. But she would be probably very offended to hear that. But she knows. We've told her 1,000 times. Maybe she wouldn't like the medium that I'm using to tell everybody else that. But anyway. So there's a school levy this fall, 16.78 mils. Would you agree? That's a big ask, right?
Yes.
How did we get to this point where we needed to ask for this amount of money now?
So it's a combined issue. So we'll start with the operating dollars. So 6.92 of that 16.78 is our operating dollars. Mm-hmm. And school districts have to repeatedly come back to their voters to continually ask for
operating. And operating is
dollars.
Like teacher salaries, the custodian salaries, the school buses?
School buses could be. That actually falls more under permanent improvement for us in the way we do our budget. But when you think about operating, you think, you know,
electric bill.
Right. Keeping the lights on, your utilities, and a majority of that budget is salaries and benefits. So we're about 80% salaries and benefits. So when we say we need operating dollars, that's about, you know, paying the people who do the real work here in the school district.
And is there a teachers union here, too?
We have a teacher union and a support staff union.
Where are we in their contract? Do you know where that?
We just settled a 2-year contract with the teachers and a 3-year contract with the classified staff.
Okay.
Classified staff would be bus drivers, custodians.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, so that's the first part. And then the second part of the levy then is the
bond. So you can expect for operating dollars for school districts to come back every 3 to 5 years. That's when you see most people, when you see them on the ballot, that's an operating, operating request. The facilities request is the other two pieces of that combined, the permanent improvement and the, I talk with my hands, so I'm going to close.
It's okay,
so
you're
sorry.
Fine. I'm just worried you're going to knock your water over there. But that's, I'm watching all my expensive electronics. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm trying
maybe I don't need to worry about
that. Oh, I know, I throw my hands around.
Okay.
And the other two are combined together to cover the facilities request. So the master plan is $165 million master plan to complete all of the projects in the district. It's been 21 years since the district asked for bond money and worked on facilities. And
what was that for? Was that for the high school?
It would have been an addition on the high school and here in the intermediate school.
Okay.
The addition that was put on the intermediate
school.
Where
are we in that? How long of a bond was that? Do you remember?
It rolls off in 2025.
Okay. So we got about 5-6 more years to go on that one. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, so it's been quite some time since we've attacked that. So we started When Chad was here, he started a project, Destination Loveland, to really start to dig into what do we need to do for a full master plan, and started the community engagement.
What spawned it? Do you know? Like, what caused him to want to start that process? Was it the district growing, the buildings aging? Is it all of the above?
So it's sort of all of the above. When you think about enrollment, we hit enrollment. We started having enrollment concerns in 2007, mm-hmm. and that's when we were in a recession. So it was really hunker down and make do. Mm-hmm. And then time passed. We had Dr. Marchhausen was the superintendent. Then, you know, Mr. Hilliker came. We just had some transitions there in leadership, mm-hmm. and so the board really pushed Chad to get that project started. Mm-hmm. So when he left, I picked up the reins on that, and we really hit it hard last year to get that community engagement around a master plan.
So what's causing these enrollment surges? Is this rental homes or new?
So the enrollment surge, enrollment's been very flat since 2007.
Okay.
We've had multiple projections, and, you know, depending on which projection you look at, you know, it can be a huge spike expected in enrollment, or it can be a decline in enrollment.
How do you determine that? Is it the amount of rental units or new construction, or?
You hire a company to study all of that. And it's a, you know, like a 48-page study where they look at mortality rate and they look
Yeah. I mean, pretty in-depth.
It's very scientific. So then essentially they give you a conservative, a moderate, and a, excessive.
Progressive.
Enrollment. And then you make your determination on how you want to operate for your, moving forward for your master plan. Mm-hmm. So we picked a very modest enrollment growth projection. Last thing you want to do is gain support and build buildings and then run out of space right away, which you hear happen because square footage is expensive. So we picked a moderate.
Do you remember, and again, put you on the spot a little bit with the number, do you remember like what the projection is expected to be? Well, you might have that. She's got a couple notes in front of her, folks, so.
I'm trying to move them without knocking the table. Let's see if I have a number that we used. I might just have a chart. Oh, I just have the chart so you can see we just picked this moderate projection.
Okay.
As you know, there's a spike and we went under the moderate and there's the conservative trying to guess.
So you look like you're expecting to gain like 1,000 students, something like that?
No, it's not even that many. See,
okay.
Here's
you have to say because we're on radio or a form of radio here.
You can't see my finger here.
No, it's yeah. It's so weird. The SD card's not picking that up.
Yeah. So this the trajectory line goes out to 2020. They enrollment projections project out to 2728, and it's projecting just at 5,000. So we're looking at
another 400 ish.
Yeah. Very modest gain.
Huh. Okay. So you're not looking to build. A new school with a much larger capacity, but you need to add a little bit of capacity.
Yeah. Gotcha. And part of the reason that space becomes an issue now is just the way we utilize space is different. Earlier, before we came on the air, you said that you have a kindergartner coming and asked about full-day kindergarten. Mm-hmm. So we only have the capacity to offer some sections of full-day kindergarten because of space. Mm. So in order to continue to meet that need, from parents to offer more sections of full-day kindergarten, we would need classrooms to do that. So that becomes a space issue. Mm-hmm. We've had an increase in enrollment in students.
So that's something the community's asked about is having, you're telling me, my little daughter Emery, she's going to start kindergarten next year. Of course, we'd love to have her in full-day kindergarten. That would be great, but you don't have the space for it. But if the community, and you do a lottery to do that, so that means that we may be told no.
Right.
And, have to pay off a school board member or something like that? Is that
it is completely randomized?
Doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way.
Okay, well, yeah, I tried. So, but if we want to make it so that every kid who wanted to go to full day kindergarten could do that, we need more space.
Yeah.
So then that's something the community's asked for, and that was part of your
facility
plan.
We're one of the few districts in the in the state that didn't offer full day kindergarten at all. So we really pushed to try and reorganize some things so that we could offer some and. You know, then we have to turn people away.
Mm-hmm. Is that expensive to change it to that? Or is it just you have to have more bodies, like more salary?
So you would add, yeah, you would add a teacher, mm-hmm. But the tuition for full day kindergarten offsets that.
Oh,
cost.
There's a fee for mm-hmm. it. Oh, I thought it was free. Darn it. No. Oh well. Okay. It's
still probably cheaper than daycare.
Oh, is it good? Because yeah. that's all that matters yeah, to dad, right?
So, yeah. so that you know, that's one example. Another one is an increase in students, preschoolers with a disability. Mm-hmm. So that has very strict requirements for classroom size and the number of students that can be in the classroom. So allocating classroom space for those programs starts to shift programs from those happen to be at LECC, shifts those to the LPS LES campus. Mm. A couple of years ago, one of the developmental disability service schools downsized, I'm sure, a funding issue, and pushed some students with some significant disabilities for their least restrictive environment, had them come back home to school with their peers, when before a lot of those students might have been educated in a separate facility. So now we have those students here with us and often require, so we needed to add a motor room and some physical therapy spaces and occupational therapy spaces so that we could meet those needs of those students and their IEP goals. So those are repurposing classroom spaces and repurposing space for things to meet specific needs for specific students. We have not quickly increasing, but a slowly increasing population of English language learner students. Mm-hmm. So it's finding, you know, tutoring space and space for those students to get a small group support.
Well, and of course, when that happens, the state gives you more money to account, right?
Negative.
Oh, really? Right. Okay. So the state is, you're mandated to do, you can't really say, oh, I'm sorry, you don't speak English, so go home. You can't say that.
Right. In fact, school districts.
Nor would you want to do that.
Well,
I should say.
And in fact, school districts are required to educate any student that joins us, yeah. that enrolls us. And it's not our job, nor are we allowed to ask about citizenship or to pursue any of that.
Oh, really?
So you have a birth certificate, you can enroll. We just need to prove that you live here within the school district limits.
And that's it. There's no interesting. Is that a problem?
I mean, our job is to educate kids.
That's such a hot topic right now.
Sure. I mean, our job is to educate kids. And so, you know, we don't get into the middle of that. That's certainly, that's certainly a concern or not a concern for community members or whomever. But the school, our job is you bring us a kid and our job is to do what we can to help them grow and achieve.
Yeah, my father came here and when he was 7.5 years old, having finished kindergarten, first grade in Germany, and spoke no English. And so he came here as an immigrant before that was a political act. You mm-hmm. know, that was just they were looking for a better life. So they took him in. Then it was the Catholic Church taught him, and then, you know, that was free back then and mm-hmm. stuff. But that's great because he was able to learn English and then, you know, going to have a successful life and have a great kid like me. So, anyway, so that's interesting. So that you have that's all these obligations that you have to fill to meet, and you don't get necessarily more funding. I don't know if people know that.
So some of those things are funded minimally. I mean, mm-hmm. you can if your threshold for since we're talking about English language learners, if your threshold reaches a certain percentage, you can get a small percentage of grant money from the state or federal grant money. Mm-hmm. But even if you had a large population, that's not paying for teachers. That's not paying for, the instructional materials. It's really more about how do you make sure those kids have access, mm-hmm. And thinking about transportation and making sure that just they have their basic needs met while they're here at school. Special education is funded federally. But it doesn't, it's not a bill. It's not like, okay, student X cost the district X amount of dollars, so we turn that bill in. We're given additional monies for special education, but it doesn't.
It doesn't cover the cost.
No, it doesn't cover the cost.
All right.
We make decisions based on what the student needs on their IEP, not based on how much things cost.
Right. So, and I guess I kind of originally asked you, how did we get to this point here that we needed so much all at once? And it was just a perfect storm of kind of things that came together. There's been, I've been reading a lot of the posts on social media, which I try to take a little bit of a grain of salt here because I know people's passions are high right now, so it's hard to think rationally. But it's a question. I mean, was it just a bunch of poor planning and nobody saw this coming, or what happened? How did we get to such a large ask, you know, now?
So if somebody would have asked me at the beginning of this process if I would have thought there was any chance we would be asking to complete the full master plan at once, I would have said there's no chance. We'll, of course, do this in chunks. Mm-hmm. And we engaged a group of people on a finance committee, mm-hmm. and there were about 12 people.
And that's like a subcommittee of the board of a school board?
They were community. There were board members on it, but they were community members. So we
and
just
where did
engaged,
they come from? Where did you,
just here, I mean, we put out the request to our parents.
People volunteered.
We did ask some people that we thought would be, you know, good, have be knowledgeable about some different things. A couple business owners, mm-hmm. And they studied. We have a consultant that helps with finance, and they studied school finance. They studied taxation. They studied Loveland's taxation. They studied all of those issues. And then their task was to make a recommendation about how we would fund the master plan. Mm-hmm. And I won't speak for them, but I think if you would have asked any of them at the beginning, they would have said, there's no way we're going to ask for all of this at once. Mm-hmm. But when you looked at, when they considered and we all considered interest rates currently, the current economy, the absolute of as time passes, things get more expensive and mm-hmm. predicting out in the future for construction costs and inflation related to that,
right.
that it made every time they worked around in that circle, it made more sense to just do it at once, do it as cheaply as possible. It was the best investment for the community to get that all done at once, that if we split it in half, it would be more expensive.
Gotcha. So you worked with them. Did you work with any other community members to come up with this plan, or was it really this finance committee that came up with the whole recommendation? Or how did you come up with the idea of, like, this is what we're going to do? We're going to build two new schools or three new schools. Three new schools proposed to be at the Grailville property on O'Bannon Road, which is in Miami Township.
Correct.
Where did you come up with that? How did that plan come up? Was that the same committee?
No, that was a whole separate group. So we started working over the summer, a year ago in the summer, started working with a group that we called ambassadors. We invited people to come that had a strong passion and
same kind of people, like you kind of put the word out.
The word out, people that had been involved in the past, community elected officials, senior citizens, parents, tried to have a broad demographic mm-hmm. and invited people to inform the process. Then we started having our community meetings. The first community meeting was back in September and the
18.
Mm-hmm, okay. Yes, sorry. And the architects presented all of the, like the repairs, like mm-hmm. bricks and mortar, how old's the roof, what's the flooring like, that just the assessment data of, you know, the condition of the buildings. Mm-hmm. And the industry standard is when over the course of 10 years, if the repairs cost 66% of the cost to rebuild.
Okay.
The recommendation is to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
So that she looked, the group, she was the architect, the principal was the one who was presenting, but it was it's an architect firm, looked at those. And then the second part of that assessment is looking at educational environment, and it looks at health and wellness. It looks at size of classroom square footage. It looks at access to natural light. It looks at the site. Is there the ability to expand on the current property? It looks at site access, parking, traffic, that sort of thing. So it brings all of those assessments together. So the second community meeting was to present that second half. And, you know, technically that could have all been done at one meeting. It just makes it a really long meeting. Mm-hmm. It's hard to pay attention that long. At least it is for me. So then after doing those, then the architect made a list of all possibilities. What are all the different combinations to deal with those recommendations. The architect's recommendations were to replace the LECC property and the Loveland Madeira 1-4 property, and then make renovations at the intermediate middle school and the high school. So she put together all of those, and then the community engagements looked like picking those apart, debating, arguing.
How many people you think were involved in that problem?
There was never less than 150 at any of those meetings.
Really? Okay. I mean,
they were huge. The meeting, we'd have them in the cafeteria at LIS, and, you know, had to fix sound and, you know, try to make sure there was a big screen so people could hear. When we did the community session where people got to pick apart the different options to really hear what people thought about that, we were in 7 small groups. We trained facilitators. Our principals all facilitated that. We had note takers to try to give people a voice and really hear what they had to say. So at the end of all of that, we put them up online, giving people their chance to say what they needed to say, what they liked, what they didn't like, ask their questions. It really came down to 2 separate options that the community was really interested in us doing more work on and learning more about. And one of those was building a new high school. And the other one was the plan that we ended up bringing forward.
Gotcha. I think that's a good place to stop for part one here. We'll go ahead and do part two. Tune in probably tomorrow, and you'll hear part two in your podcast feed. Thanks for being a part of this first edition of the first episode of Soups On. And we'll have episode two here tomorrow. So thank you very much, Dr. Krause, and we'll continue this discussion on part two.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Soups On with the Loveland, Ohio City School District Superintendent. If you have a question about the school district, have something to share, or want to be a guest on the show, please contact Soups On's producer at producer@lovelandlocalnews.com or call 513-899-NEWS, that's 513-899-NEWS or 6397. Please visit lovelandlocalnews.com and click on Podcasts to get past episodes, learn more about the show, see photos of our guests, find out about our other shows, and more. Special thanks to our musical contributors mentioned during the show. All music used with permission, and the artists retain the rights to own music. Soups On is a production of High Priority Partners, LLC, and is distributed through Loveland Local News. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved. Please rate and subscribe to our show on iTunes. Your ratings and reviews really do help others find the show. If iTunes isn't your thing, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Joanne Lichtenstein. You can find me and my voiceover services at joevoices.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Soups On.